From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on Railroad Street in Rochester near the public market. In late spring, there was a lot of talk about shutting down entire streets to car traffic, allowing businesses to spread out with fresh air seating. More creativity, more foot traffic, more space, more air. I said on this program the pandemic brought a different kind of urgency, and instead of saying no to these kinds of requests, maybe governments should say yes as much as possible. Outdoor seating, tents to stop the rain, on and on we go. Now, I know that shutting down entire streets to car traffic is different, but at the very least, a default to say yes when there was a request to add a tent or maybe more tables outside, that kind of a thing. Then maybe we could talk more about actually shutting down streets. That's what the conversation was all about in May. There was a lot of hype about turning our seating outdoors into foot traffic, pedestrian spaces, outdoor spaces for business. Urbanists were imagining American cities and towns looking like old Europe, more bicycles, fewer cars, all kinds of things happening. Well, it mostly has not happened. Why is that? Well, in Rochester, Railroad Street closed one way of traffic, essentially opening up half the street for more space. But there hasn't been a radically new approach in this crisis across the city or across the region. Our guests will discuss what has and has not happened and what it means not just during the pandemic, but beyond. Welcome our guests who are on the line with us now. Nate Polselli is with us. He's an advocate of new urbanism. Nice to have you on the phone with us, Nate.
Hi, Evan. Thank you very much.
Also with us is, good to have you. John Erlob is the co-owner of Rohrbach Brewing. Nice to have you back on the program, John.
Thanks, Evan. Nice to be here.
And Michael Mills is director of the Geneva Business Improvement District down in Geneva, in the heart of the Finger Lakes. Hi, Michael. Thanks for making the time.
Good afternoon.
Let's start with, John, your experience over on Railroad Street. Remind listeners where you are and if they're going Railroad Street. Give us a set the scene pre-pandemic and then what has changed there, John.
It's been pretty significant. Well, many things have changed, as I'm sure you know. But Railroad Street is actually on the east side of the public market. So it's kind of a commercial area anyway, but of course, on Saturdays with the market open, it's a very, very heavily traveled street. Our building is really right on the sidewalk, so it's the corner of our building, the sidewalk, maybe a 8-foot sidewalk, and then the street. And we had two-way traffic plus parking on alternate sides. So, I mean, that's kind of what we had. Most of the businesses along Railroad Street did have some type of outdoor space, but very limited because it was the sidewalk, and you had to make sure that pedestrians could still travel up and down the sidewalk, because we did have a lot of pedestrians also on market days.
All right, and then what happens? When was it? Was it May when things changed? June?
Yeah, no, it was more. I think the discussion started in May, but when I say the discussions, really, there were a number of city leaders that were saying, "Hey, we realize that if any industry's been hit hard, it certainly is the food service industry." Mm-hmm. And, you know, the restaurants, I think, you know, of course, I'm a little biased because I'm in the business, but they're kind of vital to a neighborhood and to the lifestyle that people have and what they want. So they certainly wanted to do anything they could. And we talked a little bit about the need, especially during the pandemic. I mean, there's national studies, but we know it firsthand. People want to be outside. They feel safer outside. We'll see what happens when the weather gets cold. But the city talked about, yeah, this is a possibility. And I have to tell you, Black Button, who's our neighbor and also on the street, kind of reached out to the city and said, "Hey, is there any chance we could do Railroad Street?" And within 2 weeks, so early June, which is kind of when the indoor, you could stay in and dine, within 2 weeks, they put some barriers up. And now we have a one-way street and significant outdoor dining space in the all of the neighbors, which would be Black Button, Rohrbach, Boxcar, and Bitter Honey, put up cafe lights, and we put flowers out there. And I tell you, the neighborhood has totally changed if you were to be there at night or even during the day. And there's one-way traffic towards the market.
Do you want this to continue post-pandemic? I want to assure all of our listeners there will be a post-pandemic world. I have no idea when. But do you want to see this continue, John?
We'd love it. You know, and I think the neighbors and, again, our guests like it. It is somewhat seasonal. You know, I think we can do some things to expand it a little bit early spring. People are anxious to be out. We can put heaters out and do it into the fall. What we're hoping to do, and we've talked to the city about this, I think the one-way traffic, at least for now, I think there will be a point, as you say, Evan, I think the world is changing. We're encouraging people to bike to the market, and I think there are lots of, you know, the bike lanes in the city have been fantastic. And I think we can make this work. with maybe one-way traffic. But in the meantime, we're hoping to expand the sidewalk so that it takes up at least the parking lane so that we go back to two-way traffic, but you wouldn't be able to park along that strip. And we're all about that. I mean, there are fewer cars because I think people are being more, they're carpooling or they're riding their bikes. We would love to see that extra space and be able to have that outdoor dining, you know, for a good part of the year. And we hope that, and the city is open to discussions along those lines. But it truly was amazing. I just want to point out how fast the city reacted to the needs that we had, and it really, they came right through for us.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, you hear this story from Railroad Street. You wonder why you're not seeing maybe a little bit more of it, and we hope later this hour to be joined by a member of Rochester City Council. I am not here to sort of just malign people in government. It can be hard to make things move and change, and government historically is a bit of a slow actor in that way. That's not me, again, being trying to denigrate. It's just true. So when John says things moved quickly, that should be pretty heartening to know that when there is a crisis, that things can move, and there are ways to sort of pull the gears and pull the levers. So what have your customers said about that change, not just sort of the neighbors, but the people who maybe don't live there but come down and eat there? When you get first-timers who see that space, John, what's the reaction been?
Oh, it's truly been amazing. Even the customers who are regular customers who know the neighborhood and all the rest, they just can't believe the change. I mean, it's, and especially at night, again, with all the cafe lights. And, you know, it wasn't too many years ago where we didn't have the Bitter Honeys and the boxcars. You know, Black Button and Murbach's been around for a while. But just that whole infrastructure, it has totally changed the neighborhood. And again, especially during the pandemic, people feel comfortable. That extra space is not, you know, we're not forced to just be 6 feet apart. Our tables are really spread out. It's very comfortable, and we're really following all the rules and regulations. I feel very strongly that customers need to regain their confidence that it is safe to go out and that they feel comfortable. So we're following all the rules. You know, some of the neighbors, some of the folks up at the market were a little concerned with the one-way traffic. But I think everybody was open. It just seems like there's kind of a can-do attitude, and I think people realize how important it is. So even though we might have neighbors on the other side of the street say, boy, it's tough not having the parking, most people have embraced it, and certainly our customers, it's been a great welcome to them, and they've really enjoyed it.
You know, let me turn to Nate Polselli, who, you know, when I talk to you and many of your peers in kind of the new urbanism movement, one of the consistent themes I hear, Nate, is a surprise that we didn't see more of what John is just describing. Are you surprised?
I actually am surprised, but it really, if you're a new urbanist, you're engulfed in all of this information and these new trends and the new ways of doing things, right? And that's sort of the mission of new urbanists, is to sort of promote that change of mentality that we don't have to do the things that we've, the way we've been doing them the last 50 years, which is very car auto-centric focused design. When you encourage more pedestrian access and more traffic in front of a storefront that's not a car traffic, it's foot traffic, patrons end up going to those establishments more often. So it really is it's a mentality change, and I was a little surprised that it didn't take as much of a foothold as it would have. But in speaking with some other local leaders, Dan Keating, a trustee in the Village of Pittsford, a lot of the feedback I got from businesses were that they weren't quite ready to make that leap. Perhaps they weren't as progressive in their thinking as the businesses on Railroad Street, but there's a marked concern that a reduction in parking that is 10 feet away from the business would cause a drop in their business. So it kind of goes both ways. Surprised, but yet not so much, right? There's always those groups that move forward and those groups that are a little more conservative change.
I think that's a really important point. In a moment, I'll get Michael's perspective on this from what Geneva's been doing. But let me just ask, let's go back to Railroad Street, John. You know, Nate is citing not just Rochester, but surrounding towns where business owners have said, maybe this sounds good, but really I'm concerned that if people can't drive right up and park, that's our culture. People feel like they've got to drive their car directly to an establishment, park right in front, and go in or go out on the street there. And if they can't, they won't come. And businesses maybe said in May, we're not ready to embrace that yet. What have you experienced with that, John?
Well, we're a little unique on Railroad Street because there is a lot of parking. You know, most people do still drive to the market. They're coming from all sorts of areas of the city and around the suburbs. So they're parked, and then they're willing to walk. And we do have parking not too far away. you know, if you have a real urban setting where there aren't public parking spaces, that could be a concern. Again, in our case, I don't think we've felt it. And even the neighbors who don't specifically benefit, like Warehouse 127's kind of a furniture store across the street, people still can park and go to her establishment. I think at first she was a little concerned, but in the long run, because of how the market is set up and there is still parking, people are willing to walk. And the market's a really walkable area and a very walkable neighborhood. So I think it's worked for us.
Michael Mills is the director of the Geneva Business Improvement District, which is home to one of my favorite places, Linden Street, probably my favorite street in the entire Finger Lakes region. And, you know, if you've been out there, it has that feel, especially when they do shut it down to car traffic. So that's just one little slice of it. But, Michael, take me through the approach, especially as we move through the spring toward the summer, to try to figure out the right combination of change to help businesses, to help with safety, to spread things out, and to give people more access.
Yeah, you know, I think, Evan, that was really the challenge, is figuring out the pieces that go into the puzzle. You know, the city of Geneva has been a tremendous partner. Immediately as the pandemic hit and we were on pause and it was just critical, businesses open, you know, the city partnered with us on putting 15-minute parking signs out front in front of our businesses so you could do safe and quick takeout. Their code enforcement folks were walking the district with me, going restaurant to restaurant, trying to figure out, okay, how can you expand to get more outdoor seating? Where can that be? And in fact, you know, we have examples of Red Dove Tavern using a parking lot out behind their building that was kind of unused on a regular basis, and they've made it this oasis that they call Camp Red Dove, and it's got, you know, flowers and lights, and so it really is extraordinary. But I think, you know, what the local governments like Geneva have faced is the challenge of navigating a system of existing state laws and executive orders that have come down, and then they're responsible for enforcing them locally, oftentimes without, you know, clear guidelines. So it really is a puzzle that they've been trying to figure out. And we are vibrant. We've got lots of outdoor seating, a lot of restaurants that didn't have it previously, but not the level of, you know, if you ask our business owners, the short answer is it is a bit of a missed opportunity.
Hmm, that's interesting. Okay. What are the kinds of changes there that you think are pandemic only, or are there the kinds of changes or at least the kind of lessons that you can take forward post-pandemic there, Michael?
Yeah, you know, a couple of the lessons moving forward is continued close collaboration with local government. You know, again, I represent 175 downtown businesses, professional service firms, and property owners. And, you know, we want to make sure we're having that conversation so that we can solve these riddles. But I think the other is, you know, regionally focusing on our efforts. So Geneva, you know, we see downtown as a magnet for economic development. So that's one of the lessons moving forward as we launch things like Commit to Geneva, which is a safety campaign and public awareness campaign that, you know, if you're going to travel to the Finger Lakes and have in some of your favorite wineries or breweries and then, you know, come through Geneva on the way there or back and really collaborating with those businesses to create a sense of place. So those are some of the lessons we will continue. And then the puzzle of seating and others will hopefully figure out and expand those moving forward.
And well, maybe I can ask all of you to also weigh in on the theme that I heard in May, that in Rochester anyway, which was, hey, shut down Park Avenue. No cars on Park Avenue, as if you could just do that overnight. Now, I know we did a lot of things overnight that we didn't think we could do. But for those of us like myself who don't have to actually work in planning, government, administration, it's easy to say it. It'd be cool for me. Michael, is it easy to say that? And, you know, do we have to keep a realistic eye in mind about what changes we can expect in our cities and towns and suburbs and villages? Or do you think that in these sort of extraordinary months that we've had, that we realistically can do more?
Yeah, I think the COVID-19 pandemic added speed to market forces. And so businesses have shifted online or gone out of business if they were on super thin margins. But I think some of the lessons that we've identified, hopefully we can continue those. Expanded outdoor seatings, expanded conversations. Yeah, it is really difficult in the short term to say, let's just close down a major thoroughfare, but it sets up the conversation we've been having that what does the future look like? You know, Geneva was a winner of one of the state's downtown reinvestment grants. And so we're reimagining our streetscapes. And so this is an opportunity to really deepen the conversation and bring the businesses into it and say, what do we want this to look like, and bring those consumers into it. So, yeah, I think it's incremental, but that's what we should be building on.
Sure. Nate, sometimes the stereotype of new urbanists is that, you all want a streetcar and you all want everyone on bikes 12 months out of the year, and you want all cars impounded. Now, that's the extreme, but I'm caricaturing. But do you think that the new urbanism movement is sometimes unrealistic about what's possible, or do you think that the final judgment on many, at least, cities across this country is, during the pandemic, not enough change, not enough adaptation?
I'm certainly a millennial. I love riding my bike everywhere, to the gym in the morning.
Yeah.
I also have a 72 Monte Carlo that I like to fix and drive around. So I love bikes and I love my cars. But what we really push, if I go back to the Park Ave as an example, what we're trying to find is a way to make spaces more versatile, right? Get rid of single-use spaces. And that really takes a lot of collaboration from businesses, from government, and even, local municipalities and their codes. So if we look at Park Ave, if we removed all of the side street, all of the parallel parking along Park Avenue, you would still have your two-way traffic. That would go unimpeded. You would lose some parking spaces. One of the new urbanist ideas is that if we could take a parking lot that's only used until 9 p.m., so the CVS parking lot, for example, after CVS closes, that parking lot is empty. No cars are allowed to park. Why couldn't the locals who live in that area utilize that space, right? It wouldn't impact the business, but it would allow the city to offload some of their on-street parking into these underutilized lots around the area. And that really does take a lot of collaboration from these different groups. And so we're really about compromise and about finding better utilizations for existing space with minimal, monetary investments as possible, right? We're conscious of, cash-strapped municipalities. We're trying to find more creative approaches to increasing the livability of our cities.
Sure. And John Erlob, it's one thing to do one lane of traffic. It's another to shut down the entire street to car traffic. So when you saw the public discourse say, hey, shut down Park Avenue to cars in May, were you thinking never going to happen? And that's just one example. I mean, were people unrealistic about what was possible?
I think in today's environment, and again, I strongly agree with you, Evan, we'll get past this pandemic, and I hope things get back to normal. I think it's a slow process. I think we did see people moving into the city, and as you have the density of population, both of my daughters, one's in Chicago, one's in Washington, neither have cars, neither need cars. They can get around very easily. Our city doesn't quite have that density of population, but as people start to move into the city and live in the city, they want to be able to just walk to a restaurant. And I think, over time, I think we're going to have our vehicles. I don't think things change overnight. I lived in Europe for a couple of years, and really we walked everywhere, and we did have good mass transit. If you needed to, you jump on a streetcar. We're not there yet. But I think directionally we're going towards that. So, closing Park Avenue I don't think is realistic. But again, those small steps, one-way traffic on Railroad Street, that's a small step, but it had a big impact. And I think the positive was, far outweighed the negative. And hopefully we can continue to slowly move in that direction.
Well, listeners in Greece, Gates, Pittsford, Webster, Auburn, Finger Lakes, across the region, I want to know if you have seen changes, the likes of which you think have supported business, have supported creativity. Has government said yes enough? Has that led to more foot traffic, bicycle traffic, room for families, room for people to spread out outside? Or do you think we've seen some missed opportunities this summer? 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free. 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester. 263-9994. Michael emails the program at connections@wxxi.org. If you want to email, connections@wxxi.org. Michael emails to say, Evan, Americans love their cars like they love their guns. It's like a cowboy and his horse. People don't like to be too far away from their cars, end quote. Nate Paulselli, you love cars, but you also love other options there. Michael's talking about a cultural change. Are you concerned that what you would hope for requires too much of a cultural lift?
It really requires a little bit of a mindset that it's okay if you have to walk 50 feet instead of 10 feet, and that the greater societal benefits of being able to do so far outweigh the mild inconvenience. We do have our car culture. Trust me, I love my muscle cars. I love the car culture. It can coexist. You can still be an American and embrace that and still use your bicycle for a majority of trips if you live in the city, which I do.
Okay. Well, but when, you know, when people talk about wanting to drive right up and being able to park there, I think John Urlaub from Rohrbach is making an important and I think conceding an important point there. They have a bit of an advantage in that where Railroad Street is located, there's a lot of parking, the public market, there's a lot of sort of parking right off the edge there. So you can park there and walk around a bit and still comfortably have that one lane shut down. Whereas in some other places, maybe not. Maybe people feel like, you know, maybe business owners feel like you can't do this and they can't trust that the culture would change. So I guess what I'm wondering, Nate, is this a chicken or an egg thing? You know, in that if we made these changes, if we reduced the dominance of the automobile in cities like Rochester or suburbs or villages, that people would adapt to it and start to like it? Or will those changes come when people call for it?
You stole the words out of my mouth, Evan. It is a chicken and the egg scenario. And I'm a firm believer that we need to make these slow incremental changes and use and leverage the success at Railroad Street to help implement that in other areas around the city and the surrounding suburbs. I was fortunate enough to be in Boston over the 4th of July, and for those familiar with the area, the North End is a heavily Italian district, and they removed parking on both sides of their street, still kept both the lanes, and it does feel like you're walking through Europe now. The businesses, just like a Railroad Street, are able to spread out. They're pushing to make that permanent. And that's, again, it's a small, maybe quarter-mile stretch of road. We're not talking about drastic changes here, but the seeds need to be planted for the fruit to be born and for other people to want more of that fruit.
Okay. Michael Mills, how do you see it?
Yeah, I think the market dictates a lot of this, right? And as a result of that, you know, I think your elected officials and your business owners will move in the way of consumers. And so if, you know, maybe I'm biased as someone who wrote a book on civic participation, but, you know, I think if people want to have this and they voice that with their elected officials and community groups like ours, you'll see that change over time. And it does require education of our business members as well, that, you know, you no longer need to park in front of your business and go in. We want people to actually park in a city lot right downtown and walk around downtown. So it's a bit of both. But, you know, I'm a believer that the market forces will dictate it. So if people want it, let's start asking for it.
Okay. John Urlaub, how do you see this?
You know, I do see it starting to happen. I'm a city resident also. And I think people that drive in the city know where they put in bike lanes all over. So we've gone from, like, even East Avenue, which is a fairly heavily traveled road, used to be four lanes. Now it's two with a bike lane. And for me driving around, it hasn't, you know, made it more difficult. The traffic hasn't become worse. I think that you will. I think Americans do love their cars. They're not going away, but they may use them a little bit less or find alternatives. So I think it's good. And again, in our case, just the fact that this worked so well, we may have a solid opportunity to, you know, remove the parking lane at least still have the two-way traffic, but help the businesses, help the feel of the neighborhood, make it more friendly to walk and a little bit more room, and still take care of traffic that is, you know, clearly the market is a very busy place. So I think we're moving in the right direction.
Sure. And in a moment, we're hoping to welcome member of Rochester City Council, Mitch Gruber, who has participated in quite a lot of public discourse about what changes ought to be made during the pandemic for businesses, for streets, for the way we live and structure our cities, and also what the lessons are going forward. And I think just his participation in that discourse is an indication that maybe this book that I'm aware of had some good points. It's called Battling Democracy's Decline. And Michael Mills, you know, as I understand it from the book, yeah, if we ingrain civic participation in citizens' lives starting at an early age, then maybe people won't just think about, well, every 4 years there's a presidential election and that's when I vote. Maybe they'll see that the government, is most of the impact on their lives actually comes locally, comes from, you know, council and comes from boards. and commissioners and the stuff that, you know, is viewed as a little bit wonky, but it still impacts lives most closely. But a lot of people don't really know how to get involved or don't really know how to advocate and don't spend a lot of time doing it.
Yeah, I think that's a part of it is, you know, does government work for people? That's their starting point for a lot of folks. And then how do I voice my opinion? But I'm a believer in the point of the book, which doubles as a cure for insomnia or a doorstop if you have either of those needs. But, you know, it really is people participate when they feel a connection to something. And so I'm hopeful, like John said, that people are having these amazing experiences. They're seeing what downtowns and side streets can be, and that they'll start asking for that. And once you have that connection, it's hard to take it away from people. And I think our governments, that's a big lesson for me, that working with the city government here in Geneva, they were listening and doing what they could to move us along within certain parameters that they were given by state law. But, you know, people need to feel that connection. And once they feel that connection to our spaces and how we're transforming them, I think it picks up momentum.
We're talking to Michael Mills, director of the Geneva Business Improvement District, John Erlob, the owner, co-owner of Rohrbach Brewing, Nate Pulselli, an advocate of new urbanism in Rochester. And we're talking about how our public spaces have responded to the pandemic. Back in May, there was a lot of talk about closing traffic for cars and expanding the roadways and turning them into pedestrian walkways, business spaces, outdoor seating for restaurants and bars and other businesses. And some places have done that, but not too many. The question is, did we miss too many opportunities? What are we learning from this? In a moment, we'll welcome a member of Rochester City Council and more of your feedback as well next. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, our series of conversations with school superintendents puts the spotlight on west of Rondacoy. We're going to talk about bringing hundreds of students back to school in the fall now that the state has given the green light, and we'll answer your questions. Then in our second hour, how COVID-19 has affected family planning, talking to doctors about the concerns parents and potential parents have about getting pregnant during a pandemic. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Mitch Gruber is a member of Rochester City Council, joining the conversation now. Councilman Gruber, nice to have you back on the program. How are you?
I'm good. I'm only disappointed I couldn't be here earlier.
Oh, no, I know it's a busy day for you. We're glad to squeeze it in here. So, you know, Mitch, I said at the outset here, you know, the point was not just to say, hey, this was a big missed opportunity or bash government. I think the point is to try to really understand how we make change, how we change our spaces, if that's what people want or if that's what a crisis requires. And we have seen some changes. We're talking about Railroad Street with John Erlob. We're talking about what, you know, different places like Geneva have done. Have we seen enough change to satisfy you as a member of council? I mean, if I would have told you back in May, 3 months ago, that here's what has been done, here's what's not been done, would you have been satisfied or disappointed?
I'm disappointed with the amount of space that we have been able to open up. I think I'm glad that John is on from Railroad Street. I think it's a great model of what's happened. I'll also say that the last time I was on your program, we talked about how within literally 12 hours of the governor allowing outdoor dining, the city of Rochester opened up an expansive outdoor or sidewalk permitting process where everyone who has a sidewalk or an adjacent parking lot was able to set up table service there without paying a dime, which I think is pretty important. And also it was conditional approval of the permit. So we didn't make people wait for weeks to hear back. I think that has shown some significant successes, but all along the way, we were talking and hoping about having more streets closed down like Railroad Street did. Now, I'll be perfectly honest. I've been glad to work with the administration on this, but we have a different perspective. This administration believes, and for very good reason, I would say, they believe that this needs to be initiated by the businesses. And sadly, the only place where we've seen the business association or groups take action was Railroad Street. And I will tell you a quick story of it, and I'll do it in a way that's as diplomatic as possible to not malign any individual business. But there was another street in Rochester where there actually was an application put in, and the city came in and they closed down the street in a very meaningful way, very quickly. I'd be curious to know from John's perspective if the city acted quickly, because I've heard that it was really rapid. And then literally within days, I mean days, of us closing down this other street, one of the businesses who had in fact signed on to the application came back around and said, if you don't reopen the street, I'll let you finish the sentence. But that's part of the problem here, is that we did not have businesses who were ready to do this, who were ready to truly sacrifice door-to-door parking. And I think that is something that I am disappointed in.
Are we talking about Gibbs Street now?
Yeah, I'm not going to go into any. I'm not trying to throw any individual business under the bus. It was Gibbs Street. I'm not going to go into any okay. more specifics about who signed on and then who didn't sign on. But I'll use another example that's a little bit more ambiguous. I have tried with about five different entities on Park Avenue to say this space is dangerous for pedestrians. You can get more customers. Let's do a permitting process. And honestly, with Park Avenue, it's different. Everyone I've talked to is interested. Nobody's willing to take the lead. And Park Avenue doesn't have a particularly robust merchants association. And I think that's an important lesson, too, that there's a lot of value in strong, active merchant associations. And we just didn't see that on Park Avenue.
Very interesting. Okay. John, you want to respond to some of what Mitch says there about the speed of government? I think you touched on it earlier. You did feel like the response was pretty fast on Railroad Street.
It really was incredible. And again, the idea sounds like it's simple and you put some barriers up and stuff, but I'm glad Mitch brought up the fact. I mean, there is a permitting process anytime you do outside seating, and it is a fairly lengthy process. And this was as simple as it could be. And it did happen fast. We knew that the window of opportunity, I think the city also realized, we do employ quite a few people. And I believe, again, if we think people are going to move back into the city and we're going to continue to, just see changes within the city. People want to live in a place that has the urban experience. And the urban experience is to be able to walk to a restaurant. And we were really struggling, I think, all the places on Railroad Street because we didn't really have that outdoor dining. And that's what really helped us bring people back. And the city realizes. So I think it was, what can we do to support also these businesses which employ a lot of people? So they reacted very, very quickly, and it did make a difference. We didn't have many people back until we knew that we had that extra outdoor space, and every single one of our beer hall staff is now back working with us and doing very well because we had that opportunity.
Before I get...
I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, go ahead, Mitch.
Evan, can I just say one other thing? Sorry to hog the mic, but you shut me out for 30 minutes, so now I got to really take advantage of it, right? I do think there's two very... I'm not ignorant. In fact, there's two different ways of approaching this. One is opening streets for the sake of the businesses to do more business, and the other is opening streets for the sake of pedestrians and residents for their safety and being able to, walk, bike, or, just get around. And without question, the strategy right now has been to focus on making sure that our businesses are, in fact, able to get back to work like John described. I think there's a lot of merit to the other perspective, too. I will say that we're not New York City, which, had a significant shortage in green space and opportunities for people to walk around. I mean, during quarantine, I did not have any issues whatsoever getting into green space and having some opportunity to get some distance. Other than Cobb Hill Reservoir, I'd say everywhere else it was really easy to do. But I still think that we as a city should open up some more residential streets for biking, for walking. And that's very much in line with our comprehensive plan, with the Rock 2034 strategy. And I want to say we're not done with that yet. I still think that there's time with the weather as it is now for a little while longer. We have time to still close down some streets for pedestrian perspective, not just for the businesses.
Who stands in the way of that then? Mitch?
No one stands in the way of that. That's about planning, right? That's about being able to actually get it done. So the first wave of strategy for the city in this regard was related to the business side. And I've been advocating every step of the way to also try to develop a strategy for the more kind of active transportation side. And we're starting to shift some energy and focus there now. But, not to go too deep down the rabbit hole, but this requires a lot of planning and strategy. Another place where I've been very vocal on city council is talking about police overtime rates and rising police overtime rates. And so we can't just close off any street we want without thinking about what the budgetary consequences of some of that stuff is. You have to do it in a very thoughtful and mindful way. And that just requires a significant amount of planning. We're in the process of that as we speak.
All right. Let me get some phone calls in on this subject. Matt in Rochester first. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for having me on, taking my call.
Sure.
So, so I've noticed a couple things. First off, there's about three or four parking garages in the downtown area that are basically not used at all. You have the old Radisson Hotel parking garage, Mortimer Street, and the one on Court there, between kind of near that Italian sub shop. And then another thing, you have all these parking garages that are empty, and then you have, I know you've had Bill Carpenter on before with RTS and talking about Reimagine Rochester with RTS buses going every 10 minutes. To me, this seems like maybe we should open up the parking garages and maybe not make them so expensive and kind of push, you know, people to use the public transit, and then there would be more space available next to the streets. You wouldn't need as much parking on the street. I don't know, just a thought. Thanks for taking my call again.
All right, Matt. Yeah, thank you very much. Well, let's have all of our guests weigh in. Then I'll start with Mitch Gruber. Go ahead, Mr. Councilman.
I mean, that happened. Parking garages weren't charging for the from March, whenever we started, March 13th, until I believe it was middle or end of July. So I think that happened, and I think that strategy worked to an extent. I mean, I think all the things that we're doing work to an extent, because we're doing really well as a region right now in terms of our numbers with COVID. And on top of that, as John said, a lot of our restaurant businesses have started to bounce back in meaningful ways. But, you know, I'm not sure what else to comment other than to say we did that for 4 months.
Okay. Anything you want to add, John Erlob, what you heard there?
Not really, Evan. I think it's, you know, I think one of the things about Rochester is that we're so used to free parking. If you've lived in any other city, really, we have good opportunities to park. I mean, if you're in New York, not only do you pay a fortune to park, you can't even find it. We've got good parking. We've got good parking garages. I think people are used to going to the mall or to Wegmans and just have free parking. So some of it's just a mindset. It's where we live, but I think that can change over time.
It's so true. Nate, I have been with people who discover there's now a space that they thought would be free is paid parking. And the notion of paying to park has enraged people, I've seen. I do think it's part of the culture, that expectation John talks about. What do you think, Nate?
It's definitely a cultural shift. I think that's really a tough one to change, as John said. And we saw that with the city a while back where they tried to extend the day parking, I think, until 8 o'clock in the evening, received a lot of pushback to that. And it was to close some sort of a budgetary deficit, if I recall correctly. And the nice solution they took with that was, okay, we understand the businesses. We're going to leave it at 6 o'clock. It's all free after 6. We're just going to increase the rates just slightly during the day. So I think that you have to be understanding of the mindset of the region as well when you make policies like these, and understand that in some way, for some things, the region is just not ready for it yet. So you really have to pick those easy wins to move forward with.
What's the culture like in that regard in Geneva, Michael Mills?
Well, I spend more time talking about parking than I'd probably imagine.
Oh, man, we do too on this show. It's amazing.
it's amazing. But, no, you know, look, I mean, I think what I would say is really if you're trying to create vibrant spaces is just understanding the barriers of what's preventing people from coming down to interact in your spaces. And so if parking is a challenge, you know, as Nate said, you need to understand where the consumer is. But I think where I would pivot is, you know, the idea of using parking spaces or giving access to parking spaces is just at times like this and moving forward, being creative with the spaces we have. Downtown Geneva is 18 and a half acres. It's got two large parking lots bordered by a lake and a main street. And so, you know, too often we see those parking lots as parking lots instead of what they could be. And so, that's what I would love to take from the caller and get us pivoting that way.
Okay. Let me get back to your phones, and this is Richard in Rochester next. Hi, Richard. Go ahead.
Hi. I recently moved downtown from Park Avenue neighborhood, and I find, and I'm older, so biking is not going to be that frequent. To me, I think the thing you're missing is the absence of something we once had in Rochester, a downtown circulator. There are distances downtown that are greater than people want to walk. Walking to go to a restaurant or ice cream or whatever it is something like in the 5 to 10 minute range. But RGRTA, strapped as it is, very infrequent bus service, doesn't provide the amenity that's needed. So, well, when I moved, I sold the second car. Two of us were working, sold the second car. But there's an absence of the transit alternative, especially because 6 months of the year, you don't want to be outside and biking. And I think a lot of these problems are going to solve themselves. I don't know about Geneva, but for Rochester, a lot of these problems are going to solve themselves when people who choose to live near the action downtown have the option for distances that are more than a walk of having transit that's within a 10-minute schedule or so.
But
and the downtown circulator worked for many, many years.
But Richard, Richard, for our listeners who are in their 20s, 30s, maybe even 40s, they're going to hear circulator. I don't even know that they know what you're talking about.
It's a jitney. It's a small bus that's free, and it goes on a 10-minute schedule, and it goes along the main avenues. You'd be talking about Main Street, Monroe Avenue. I don't know. Hopefully North on Joseph. Has that rebuilt itself?
Mm-hmm.
And that takes the onus off the longer walk.
All right. Well, Richard, thank you for the phone call and some of the thoughts there. And I will kick it over to our guest to respond. And I'll also say, Bill Carpenter of RTS, maybe it's time to come back on this program. We'll talk about some of these issues with you and how the pandemic is sort of impacting public transit. And there's a lot more to talk about with people like Bill. But all of our guests, I think, can weigh in. And Mitch Gruber, Mr. Councilman, are we going to see, do you think circulators are part of the future?
If I have anything to do with building the future, then the answer is yes. I really do believe in a downtown circulator. I've had conversations about this with Bill Carpenter before. I'll also just say to Richard, I feel so Bill Carpenter and RGRT have been phenomenal during COVID, but let's not forget they spent 2 to 3 years doing public input and building a pretty phenomenal plan of Reimagine RTS. And then it was supposed to launch in June of this year. And of course, COVID has made that not happen. So I think that everybody's judgments right now and assumptions about RTS are true of a previous iteration of RTS. And that we need to give them a little bit of time and space to execute this vision. But yes, I believe in the downtown circulator. I'm 34 years old. I've spoken to a lot of people about the circulator that used to exist in Rochester. And the kind of knock on it is that it was considered the drunk bus. It was not how people got around from the parking garage to their business or from their apartment to the restaurant. It was how people got from bar to bar. And there's nothing wrong with that. In particular, in fact, it's certainly a whole lot safer than people getting behind the wheel. But ultimately, that is not the vision for a circulator that Richard's describing. So I think what that speaks is we have to have a whole lot more planning and thoughtfulness around it. But I really do believe that with our new comprehensive plan, the new direction of RTS, it is not out of the normal possibilities, and I'd like to help build that reality.
Okay, Nate Pulselli, do new urbanists want to see circulators?
Hold barriers.
There you go, Nate. Yeah, go ahead. Start again. Go ahead, Nate.
Okay. I would say absolutely. What we really want to do is we want to limit the barriers for individuals to frequent businesses and establishments, right? That's our goal. Our goal is a thriving, prosperous, tight-knit community. And if that makes it that, if a circulator makes it that much easier for someone to drop their car off at a convenient garage and hop on a little bus to their destination, then we're for it.
Okay. John Erlob, is that something that appeals to business owners?
I'm sure it does. I mean, we have different neighborhoods, but they're a little spread out, so it certainly would make it more convenient. I also feel, too, that what we've seen with the shared ride apps, that kind of helps. It's just a more efficient way of moving people around because the cars are not coming from a far distance. We live in the Browncroft area, which is really the city, and if I'm going to go to Jazz Fest or something, I just know it's going to be a hassle to park. We just jump on a shared ride, and it is pretty easy. And then that person drops us off, and a minute later, they're picking someone else up. So that, in some ways, gets us a little closer there, too. But I think as far as a bus that would come routinely, that would be very positive, I think, for the business owners in the city.
All right, Michael Mills, how about in Geneva?
Yeah, we have partnerships with RTS and are fortunate to have bus service through Ontario County. But, I think the caller reminds us that not all customers, not all residents are the same. And so as we're planning spaces and activities, we need to be mindful of how people can get there and interact and take advantage of all the great things we have going on in Geneva and in Rochester.
Well, in our last few minutes, I want to look ahead and kind of preview a conversation we're going to have later in the month. We've been talking about whether this summer has been successful or a missed opportunity during a pandemic to get a little more creative with space outdoors for businesses, to allow for the shutting down of car traffic, to get people outside and spread out and enjoying what businesses are doing. Now, we've also been talking about whether we can apply those lessons post-pandemic. Let's say still in the pandemic, and unfortunately, we're gonna have to grind out some cold weather months here coming up here. I'm not necessarily looking forward to that just because, I'm worried about the impact on business owners. So, John Erlob over at Rohrbach, can you foresee businesses operating space heaters by bigger numbers, more people deciding I'm going to bundle up and eat outside as late into the season as possible? We're gonna try to keep doing it this way, or is this going to be, maybe a sparser population of diners in the winter?
Well, what the pandemic has really done, because it has hit our industry hard, is we've become very creative. We're kind of in a survival mode. We really are, for our staff, for the businesses. And I think you're going to see a lot of that because it isn't going to change. I mean, I think people are getting a little bit more comfortable because of the current numbers, but I think we're all worried about what could potentially happen. People are going to feel more comfortable dining outside, at least from a restaurant standpoint. I think you will continue to see a tremendous amount of creativity. And again, it comes out of the need to survive one way or another.
All right. Nate Polselli, do you think people are looking forward to maybe trying to keep doing this later than they normally would? I'm talking about diners and customers and people who just want to be interacting with businesses and with sort of each other.
Absolutely. I'm in alignment with a lot of you folks with some concern coming into the winter, especially with children at home and schooling. I would like to stay outside as long as humanly possible. If we look to another successful event that started, the Rock Holiday Village, it really shows us that the community is willing to come out in the cold weather months to support businesses for events despite the weather, right? What we really need to do, and to John's point, those businesses are getting creative. So if they can create an atmosphere that encourages folks to continue coming out, Rochesterians, I've noticed, really support their local businesses. I come from New England, and I'm just really impressed with the local dedication that people in Rochester have to supporting their establishments. So it really comes down to creating the right atmosphere and environment, and I think the people will come. I really do.
Mitch Gruber, you agree?
I do, and I'm sorry if you hear a crying baby in the background.
That's
doing
all right.
I can over here. I would say that the only thing I would add is that it's not just the restaurants that need to be creative. Government needs to be creative too. And the reality is this is going to be a really hard time for every industry. Restaurants for sure require discretionary income. We're going to see discretionary income continue to decrease as we enter a pretty serious recession. And so we have to be creative. And I would say that our sidewalk permit process, drive down Arnett Boulevard, go look at the Arnett Cafe over there, see what we've done, look at what we did with ADW before they temporarily closed. The city is willing to be creative. Look at Railroad Street. The question is, and I think this is the lesson you want to talk about, Evan, the question is, can we figure out how to build creativity that spans government, that connects government to businesses to community? And that's really difficult. That's been my hardest lesson in 2.5 years of serving in elected office, is that there's never kind of this one monolithic notion of community. Everybody has different opinions. People want something to be closed and they want it to be open. People say this should happen, but that should happen. They're next door neighbors. So we need to figure out how we're all going to be creative together. And I'm very hopeful that the sad realities of the pandemic and the recession coming are going to make us do that.
All right. About 1 minute left here. Michael Mills, how do you see it from the Geneva perspective?
I would pull what everybody said together and say that that is all true. The other value word here is value. As people are struggling with tighter and tighter budgets and less time to get out and do things, you have to give them a reason. So I think that collaboration with government to create spaces and businesses collaborating with each other to provide true value is going to be really critical.
A lot of great lessons and perspectives this hour, and I don't say this in a dark sense, just a realistic sense. The conversation we're having right now in August 2020 is one that we might be focused on one summer from now, 2021. You know, maybe this pandemic is right in the same place, and we're still seeing that creativity and those efforts to serve business and to make sure that people are safe in public spaces. So these conversations continue, and I'm really grateful for the time. Michael Mills, director of the Geneva Business Improvement District, some really great places in that city. Thank you, Michael. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks for having me. We really appreciate it.
Our thanks to Mitch Gruber, member of Rochester City Council, and to Mitch Gruber's singing child in the back. That's a beautiful voice.
We both thank you.
That's a beautiful voice, Mitch, and don't ever apologize for that. Nice to have you. John Erlob, co-owner of Rohrbach, thanks for making the time for the program. Good luck to you and all your colleagues on Railroad Street.
Evan, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Everybody have a great weekend and get out and support your local business.
You got it. Nate Paulselli, an advocate of New Urbanism, thanks for making it work. Nice talking to you.
Pleasure as well, Evan. Thank you.
You got it. The whole team here at Connections, Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. I'll echo what John said. It is a gorgeous time. I hope you appreciate that and find a way to support in any way that you can, and we'll be right back with you on Monday.